and condemning Israeli atrocities in Gaza. From the Persian Gulf to the Caspian Sea, vessels flew the Palestinian flag alongside the Iranian banner. Fatima Masumi tells us more.
Under a unified sky, the territorial waters of Iran mirror a nation's resolve, coming alive as over 3,000 naval vessels participate in a monumental naval parade, showcasing unwavering support for Palestine. The massive parade also demonstrates the strength and readiness of IRGC's naval forces, sending a strong message to adversaries just one day prior to international Quds Day rallies. This is not just a show of maritime prowess, but a symbol of solidarity, with the flags of Iran and Palestine waving proudly.
This is the fourth year that the naval parade is being held to mark the occasion, featuring civilian vessels from volunteer forces alongside other naval ships. First and foremost, this event sends a strong message of solidarity with Palestine. It also demonstrates to the Caspian Sea littoral states that this body of water represents friendship. Also, it demonstrates that Iran is always ready to support its people and protect its sovereignty against threats, as the parade is taking place simultaneously along the coast of the Persian Gulf and the Sea of Oman.
The parade, conducted simultaneously in Iran's territorial waters from the Persian Gulf and the Sea of Oman to the Caspian Sea, features a variety of vessels, from advanced naval warships to smaller boats manned by besieged volunteer forces, all proudly displaying the flag of Palestine next to the Iranian banner.
The event you are witnessing today is a naval parade conducted by the Iranian Navy and volunteer forces. Here at our naval base, 150 vessels of volunteer forces and 30 vessels from the IRGC Navy's northern base are participating in the parade in the north. This parade demonstrates solidarity with the oppressed people of Palestine and condemns the atrocities committed by the Israeli regime in Gaza. Additionally, it aims to showcase the military strength of the volunteer forces and to enhance unity among the various branches of the armed forces.
Ahead of international Quds Day rallies, this maritime demonstrations has tuned into an annual tradition, underscoring the enduring bond between Iran and Palestine.
And that's the message from Iran's territorial waters: unity, strength, and unwavering support for Palestine ahead of Quds Day, showcasing Iran's maritime resolve and solidarity to the world. Fatah Masumi, Babolsar.
And Iranians are getting ready to celebrate International Quds Day. Our correspondent Gisu Misha Ahmadi has spoken with a number of Iranians to get their views on this year's Quds Day. Here's what they had to share with us.
Participating in the rallies is both a religious and a human duty. Just like all Muslims around the world, we will join in solidarity with the Palestinians to show our support.
I hope that one day, very soon, we can hold mass prayers together with Palestinians and they will achieve victory.
I will definitely participate in the rallies. It is my duty to support this cause.
This day is essential for us, and the issue that concerns Muslims worldwide is Gaza. Therefore, I not only pray for them, but also actively participate in the rallies.
The Palestinians are part of us, and we will always stand by their side.
The Palestinians fighting against oppression should know that they have our unwavering support.
Now, Palestinian other resistance leaders and officials have addressed U.S.-Israeli genocide in Gaza and other regional developments in messages issued on the occasion of upcoming International Quds Day. They've also highlighted the significance of this event, which is marked on the last Friday of the holy month of Ramadan, a day dedicated to show solidarity with Palestinians worldwide. Let's take a listen to what they had to say as well.
At the end of my speech, I underscore the following. First, the unity of the forces of resistance in the region will continue, whatever be the sacrifices. Number two, the Palestinian people will continue to stand resilient on their territory, holding on to their territory, and will not accept any other alternative other than this territory. Number three, the Islamic Jihad movement in Palestine will continue to to live up to the pledge, to its pledge to the martyrs and its principles and to the martyrs from amongst the Palestinian people, and it will continue to commit to the unity of the forces of resistance against the aggression. Number four, the forces of resistance will continue to commit to their firm stance of liberating all of our captives in exchange for the captives of the enemy. And in addition to that, the withdrawal of the enemy's forces from all the territories which they entered into the Gaza Strip. The aggressive course of the Israelis with the American partnership, this is in order to achieve a clear goal, striving to eliminate the Palestinian cause and an attempt to displace the Palestinian people from Palestine. And this is clear in the statements and the declared stances and statements from the Americans and the Israelis. I underscore that we remain committed firmly to our stance based on principle and based on ethics and values in support of the Palestinian people in whatever way we can. The resistance took the initiative with the storm to re-establish the equations of the conflict, which will not go backwards. The clock will not turn backwards, and the resistance has proven its ability to take the initiative and to go on the offense, thank God. It showed the world the incapability and the security and military failure of the Israeli enemy and its inability to break the will of our people and their resistance, despite 15 months of fighting or killing and terrorism and destruction, despite the complete full-fledged support from the United States of America for the enemy and the open-ended political cover which is provided in order to commit war crimes and genocide and starvation and the assassinations.
Well, more Palestinian civilians have fallen victim to U.S.-Israeli genocidal war on Gaza as the regime continues to pound the blockaded territory with heavy air and artillery strikes. In one of the latest attacks on Gaza City, Israeli aircraft bombed a home in al-Saftawi area, killing 7 Palestinians. In central Gaza, artillery shelling targeted northern neighborhoods of Buraj, Nuseirat, and al-Maghazi refugee camps. The regime forces also destroyed residential homes in Beit Lahia. According to the Gaza Health Ministry, at least 25 people were killed since the early hours of this morning. This includes a Hamas spokesperson, Abdulatif al-Kanu, who was martyred after his tent was bombed in Jabalia al-Balad, north of Gaza. The attacks come as a death toll from Israel's renewed aggression since last Tuesday has reached 855, and overall death toll from Israel's genocide since October of 2023 has now surpassed 50,200 Palestinians dead, with nearly 114,000 wounded. The Israeli regime's intensified deadly attacks across the besieged Gaza Strip, killing more civilians and destroying more infrastructure. To get a better look at the situation, let's listen to some Palestinians describe the consequences of latest Israeli airstrikes on Gaza City.
We were sleeping safely in our multi-story house, only to wake up at 2 a.m. to an F-16 missile that fell from the fifth floor to the first floor, causing a massacre. My cousin, his wife, and his children were all martyred and torn to pieces, all in one bag.
We were sleeping and suddenly we woke up to the sound of a strike and the dust, and we found 3 women, 3 children, and a man who had been martyred. What was the sin of these people that they should die like this? They were all torn to pieces. What was their sin?
Now, since the start of the Gaza genocide, the Israeli regime has targeted journalists in an attempt to suppress coverage of its atrocities throughout the territory. In the latest assault in northern Gaza, 2 Palestinian journalists were killed, bringing total number of media workers killed since October of 2023 to 208. Now, in response, Palestinian journalists gathered outside Al-Nasser Hospital in Khan Yunis in southern Gaza to protest attacks on their colleagues.
In an attempt to suppress footage and silence journalists, many attacks were directed at our families. We were displaced and threatened repeatedly, all to prevent us from delivering the truth to the world and to ensure that only the occupation's narrative prevailed. All these targeted attacks and actions carried out by the occupation forces to suppress the image and truth will not deter us from continuing on our path. We will keep sending our message to the world, exposing the crimes of the occupation, and laying them bare before the conscience of all humanity. We call on the international community to uphold its responsibility towards Palestinian journalists and impose the maximum penalties on these criminals who target us and our families day and night.
Tensions are running high across the occupied West Bank as the Israeli occupation military continues pressing ahead with incursions into towns and refugee camps. A Palestinian teenager was killed and several injured in the latest attacks. And earlier, we were joined by our correspondent, Naka Hamid, out of occupied Ramallah, for your details.
In the last 12 hours, the Palestinian Ministry of Health has declared the martyrdom of the Palestinian young man, Ismail Samir Ashurafa, 18 years old, from Beita, who was shot by Israeli forces near the town of Huwara. The IOF, while raiding Beita, has assaulted Palestinians. Among them, many Palestinian journalists were assaulted in the entrance of Beita. Not only in Nablus, but also the situation was extremely tense in Jenin and in Tul Kerem, as the IOF is getting ready to demolish even more homes to the already demolished infrastructure and buildings inside Jenin refugee camp and Nur Shams refugee camp. Moving a little bit over here towards Ramallah, where clashes happened between Palestinians and young Palestinians and IOF forces inside Silwad village, also Al-Mghayyar village, Turmus Aya. Many areas that have been raided through the hours of the night by the IOF forces. Going towards Al-Khalil, where a major attack on the Palestinian village of Beit Umar to the north of Al-Khalil took place while Palestinians were praying.
Palestinian filmmaker Hamdan Bilal, who's the co-director of Oscar-winning documentary, has been released after being detained by Israeli occupation forces. Bilal was attacked by Israeli settlers in the occupied West Bank before regime soldiers took him into custody instead of his attackers. Now, his detention has sparked international outrage, with human rights organizations condemning the targeting of Palestinian journalists and filmmakers. Our correspondent Naka Hamid has your details.
Israeli authorities have released Palestinian filmmaker Hamdan Bilal, a co-director of the Oscar-winning documentary No Other Land, after detaining him overnight. Bilal was in Susia, a village in the occupied West Bank, when a group of Israeli settlers violently attacked him. Despite his injuries, Israeli soldiers arrested him instead of his assailants.
Settlers and army, they attacking my home, and they beating me. They continue to beating me. It's like around between 15, 20 minutes until I was bleeding from all my head and face. And finally, after this attack, they took me to the place. I don't know what is it. I stayed there. It's like all the night. They was laughing about me.
Bilal was taken into custody and was held overnight before being released.
On Monday, there was a massive attack on Susia village, where my friend and colleague and co-director of No Other Land documentary, Hamdan Bilal, lives. There was attack in his home and other houses in the village. Settlers and soldiers targeted him precisely to revenge against the success of the movie and against Hamdan as an activist in the village, that documenting the attacks of the settlers that happening on his village all the time and other villages in Masafer Yatta. This is not an isolated attack. Attacks happening all the time, but this time it was revenge and attack on Hamdan for his success, to try to punish him and to silence him and to prevent him from doing his work.
Bilal's documentary, No Other Land, co-directed with Palestinian and Israeli filmmakers, sheds light on the forced displacement of Palestinians. This incident raises further concerns about the growing attacks on Palestinian journalists and activists. As Israeli violence escalates, documenting the reality on the ground is being silenced. Naka Hamid, Ramallah, Occupied West Bank.
Yemeni military has carried out more anti-Israel operations in retaliation for aggression against the Gaza Strip, forcing settlers to rush to shelters. Air raid sirens were heard in Al-Quds and the central parts of the occupied Palestine. The Israeli media reported that takeoffs and landings have also been halted at Ben Gurion Airport following the Yemeni operation. Israeli regime claimed it intercepted two Yemeni missiles. The regime heavily censors any information on attacks in occupied territories. Later, the Yemeni army issued a statement detailing latest operations against Israel and also American warships.
In support of the oppressed Palestinian people and in support of their striving resistance, the missile force targeted Ben-Gurion Airport in the occupied Jaffa area with a Zulfikar ballistic missile and a military target south of occupied Jaffa with a Palestine 2 hypersonic ballistic missile. The operation successfully achieved its goal, thanks be to God. In response to the ongoing U.S. aggression against our country, the missile force, the unmanned aerial vehicle, and the naval forces carried out a joint military operation targeting enemy warships in the Red Sea, led by the U.S. aircraft carrier Truman, with a number of ballistic and cruise missiles and drones.
Yahya Sariyat said operations have thwarted U.S. attempts to advance its warships towards the southern Red Sea region and to expand its aggression against Yemen through strikes from sea. The spokesman said a deadly U.S. aggression will only increase Yemeni steadfastness and resilience, and he said the operations of the past few days were only the beginning of a gradual expansion of operations. Said he also vowed Yemen's operations will continue to prevent Israeli navigation through the Red and Arabian Seas until the Gaza genocide stops. Iran's foreign minister says a major security breach in U.S. plans to bomb Yemen highlights Washington's disregard for human life and decision-making. Abbas Araghchi, in a social media post, said the breach shows incompetence of U.S. decision-makers, and he said leak is another reason for Iran to receive recent U.S. political overtures with skepticism. This comes after senior American officials accidentally shared their Yemen bombing plans with a journalist through a group chat. The American journalist revealed that he had hours of advance notice through that group. The White House has confirmed the leak, but has tried to downplay it as a minor glitch. Democrats, however, have slammed the leak as sloppy and careless, urging intelligence leaders to address the risks to national security. And that brings us to the end of your news bulletin, everyone. Thank you for joining us, and bye-bye for now.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
IRIB English Radio presents The Month of Allah. Let's be with Hujjatul Islam Sayyid Abbas Razavian.
As I look to nature's beauty, dazzled am I, knowing everything calls on you, the Lord Most High.
Allah, Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen, Wassalatu Wassalam ala Ashrafil Anbiya'i wal Mursaleen, Sayyidina Abul Qasim al-Mustafa Muhammad. Welcome to the program Month of Allah. We were talking about the connection of God in this month, and we said that it is critical for human beings to be connected to God. That a human that is not connected to God, a human that is not aware of Him, that does not follow Him, that does not obey Him, according to the verses of the Holy Quran, he is dead, he is not alive. And that our goal in this month is to try to maximize this life, maximize our connection to God, to feel alive and to make other people feel alive. When we look at some of the traditions, we see that in the traditions it mentions that if a person does not have this faith, this iman to God, that they will have distress, that their heart is always moving. Their heart is moving between the throat and between the chest, it says. إِنَّ الْقَلْبِ لَيَتَرَجَّهُ فِي مَا بَيْنَ الصَّدْرِ وَالْحَنْجَرَىٰ, that the heart is moving between the throat and moving between the chest. But what happens? But then when it gets tied with iman, when it gets tied with the belief, in the firm belief in God, then it says, فَإِذَا أُغِدَ عَلَى الْإِيمَانِ قَرَّىٰ, and then that heart will become stabilized. It is a beautiful tradition in Al-Kafi from Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, that our heart is moving between our throats and our chests, that we're always at distress, it moves constantly. But once we have faith, it becomes stable. And this is another effect of the connection to God. It brings us calmness, it brings us stability. No matter how many problems we face, because we have faith, because our heart is now stabled, we don't have anxiety anymore, we don't have distress anymore, because you have reached certainty. When we look at other traditions, it's very interesting that dhikr and remembrance of God is a food for our souls, is a food for our hearts. وَجَعَلَ غِذَاءَهُ dhikr. God has made the heart pure. God has made the heart purified, but has made its food, dhikr and remembrance. So imagine a heart that does not receive remembrance of God. Imagine a person that is constantly thinking of everything else but besides God. A person that does not remember God, na'udhu billah, a person that does not pray. He is not connecting and talking to God. He is starving himself. He is starving his heart. Other narrations we read, مُدَاوَمَةُ الذِّكْرِ قُوتُ الْأَرْوَاهِ, constant, continuous remembrance of God is the food of the heart. Another attribute of connecting to God, another effect of connecting to God, is that you will be having much more hope than before. Because hope itself is life. In the tradition says, وَهُوَ يُحْيِي الْقَلْبِ, Raja' and hope will make the life and the heart alive. But what kills the nafs? Khawf. Wal khawfu yumeetu an-nafs. But fear, and fear of our actions, fear of the consequences of our actions, this causes our nafs and our desires to be killed. If you're tired of following your desires, think and fear God. See, what would happen if I disobey Him? You'll kill your nafs. At the same time, if you want to enliven your heart, another way to enliven your heart is having hope of God. Once you have hope of meeting Him, hope of heaven, hope of meeting the 12th Imam, inshallah, and hope of His global government that will fill the world, we will be filled with hope, inshallah. because the hope that we have in this connection to God for us is life, is hayat. And this is how we have been programmed. This is how Allah has designed us. This is how God wants us to live. When we read the Holy Quran, it says to us, وَلَكِنَّ اللَّهَ حَبَّبَ إِلَيْكُمُ الْإِيمَانِ. Allah has made you love iman. Allah loves, makes what made us to love faith. And once we reach faith, it makes us have more certainty. وَزَيَّنَهُ فِي قُلُوبِكُمْ. And has beautified religion in your hearts and has made you despise disbelief. وَالْفُسُوقُ وَالْإِسْيَانِ. And defiance and disobedience. Therefore, this is something very natural for us to love faith, for us to be despised with disbelief, for us not to like sins and disobedience of God. This is something very natural for us. And when we come to the connection of God, we're going back to our original form of how we should have been. Therefore, everything becomes for us very natural, and that our hearts become full of stability and strength. Wa sallallahu ala sayyidina Muhammadin wa ahli bayti tayyibin at-tahirin.
قال الإمام علي عليه السلام الدعاء مفتاح الرحمة ومصباح الظلمة.
Imam Ali alayhi salam said, supplication is the key to mercy and a lantern in the darkness.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah, ma lana rabbun siwa.
La ilaha illallah, la
first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhal ladheena amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis sabri was salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of RIB English Radio, now it's time to listen to a short speech by Sheikh Mahdi Rastani.
Tonight, inshallah, we want to take some time to delve into the justice of Ali ibn Abi Talib. So he heard in some of his letters, he heard that one of his own governors by the name of Uthman ibn Hunayf has been invited to a luxurious gathering. Now, a gathering that has really good food, for a normal person might be fine, yes? But for the governor, he's not allowed to go. This is based on the rules of Ali. You're not allowed to go, except he went. He wrote in this letter, Yabna Hunayf, I've heard that you go to these luxurious gatherings. And in these luxurious gatherings, they're the type of gatherings who, by the way, only the wealthy are allowed to come. The poor are not allowed to come. And there are foods of all sorts and so on and so forth, lavish. He said, Yabna Hunayf, everyone has a leader they look up to. Everyone has a standard that they go by. Let me tell you what my standard is. Ala, no, wa inna imamakum, know that your imam, qad iktafa, he eats 2 dates a day. And he eats a loaf of bread a day. If you can't apply justice, you're not supposed to be in this position. He went on and on. The letter is a long letter. Harsh statements from Ali. Harsh. You know what he ended the letter with? He ended the letter with this. He said, Yabna Hunayf, O son of Hunayf, let the loaves of bread be enough for you and let those loaves of bread protect you from the hellfire. Don't go on taking from the Baytul Mal of Muslimin and adding it to your own wealth. said, let the loaves of bread protect you from hellfire. And when he was putting Malik ibn Ashtar in charge, yes, of the land of Egypt. The land of Egypt, of course, is a civilization of its own. It's a place of its own. There were fights over who was going to be the governor of Egypt. Yes? He sent Malik Ashtar. Long, long letter. Yes? Inshallah, one time we'll have a series on that letter. Long letter. In the letter, he said, Malik, now that I'm putting you in charge and you're going there, over time, you will start to feel some power and authority in yourself because you're not ruling over some little village. There were smaller places Ali gave to Kumail and he gave to these other people. For Egypt, he gave it to Malik Ashtar. He sent back his own son. Yes? Muhammad ibn Hanafiya. The Imam sent him back. He said, no, you can't take care of this. This is too serious. He sent him back. His son was surprised. Why? What did I do something wrong? The Imam wrote to him. He said, you didn't do anything wrong. It's just out of your ability to manage something like this. Misra, Egypt is not a small thing. He wrote to Malik. He said, Malik, when you go there, over time, you will find an ubuha inside of yourself. Slowly over time, you'll feel like you're somebody. And he said, remember, Malik, when you feel like you're somebody, remember there's someone above you who's more of a somebody than you are. These are the lines you and I have to remember when we do injustice to our own household and our own relatives. The Prophet said, ittaqi da'wat al-mazloom, stay away. Be fearful of the dua of the one who's been wronged, the one who has been oppressed. فَإِنَّهُ لَيْسَ بَيْنَهُ وَبَيْنَ اللَّهِ حِجَابٌ. There's no barrier between his dua and God. And I can tell you for sure sometimes that mazloom is in our own house. I can tell you for sure. Sometimes that mazloom that the narration is talking about is in your own house. He wrote to Malik, he said, Malik, when you go, know that there's someone watching above you. In some of his other letters to his governors, he writes, he says, listen, when you go, you have to constantly send me reports because I am watching you. And then Ali said this, he said, and know there's someone that's watching me. He said, I'll ask for you to send your reports, but know there's someone watching me too, let alone you. So Qanbar says, I came to the house of Ali. And I found whatever of the wealth people send to Ali, the only thing Ali does, he takes a look at it. The only question he asks is, how are we supposed to divide this amongst people? That's the only thing he asks. He never asks, how much am I going to get? So Qanbar says, you know what? I thought one day, this time when they send some of this wealth, I'll bring it into the house myself. I'll keep it for Ali. So that at least he can walk away with something himself. The narrations say he used to divide things and then people used to come and ask for his own share. He used to give his own share. So I said, I will keep some of this. He brought some of the silver, some of the darahim. He brought some of the dinars into the house. He came to Ali. He said, Ya Ali, come, I have something wonderful for you. And Ali said, what is it that you have for me? He said, Qum ya Ali, come, I just want to show you. Come. So he stood up and he took the hands of Ali. And Ali following him. And they went into the room and all of a sudden Ali saw these bags full of money, full of silver and gold coins. And he said, Ya Ali, I brought these because you never hold on to anything for yourself. And Ali said, I'd rather have my house be on fire than to have Baytul Mal, the rights of others, being trampled because of me. The narration says he took out his sword, he slashed these bags, and the gold coins and the silver coins fell on the ground in front of Qanbar and in front of Ali. And then Ali said a line no one else in history has ever said, no one else in history other than a ma'soom will ever say. He looked at the gold coins. He said, Ghurri ghairi, go and trick somebody else. You're not going to trick me. He looked at the silver coins. He said, Ya Bayza, go trick somebody else. Ghurri ghairi, you're not going to trick me. He turned to Qanbar. He said, this is how you're going to divide this wealth. And even that final wealth that Ali had, he divided as well. And this is why Ali was this character that was full of virtues. Anytime he walked, his close companions who understood who Ali was, they just wanted to look at Ali. That's how beautiful this character was. The narration says he came into the masjid, he was praying. Abu Dhar was with us in the masjid. We saw Abu Dhar doesn't take his eyes off of Ali. Everything Ali does, he's looking at Ali. We looked at Abu Dhar, we said, why are you doing this? He's just here to pray. You won't lift your eyes from him. He said, you don't know, my Habib, my beloved, he was talking about the Prophet. He said, my Habib told me, looking at four things is ibadah. One of them is the Kaaba. When you see the Kaaba, yes, you look at it, it is ibadah for you. One of them is the Mus'haf of the Quran. When you open the Quran, you look at it, this is ibadah. The third of them is your own parents. If you look at them with kindness, this is ibadah. And he said the fourth of them that the Prophet said was wajhu Ali, in the face of Ali. He said, the Prophet told me, if you just look at the face of Ali, this is who Ali was. When they told him, some of your companions have left you, they've gone, they've joined the side of Muawiyah. You know what Ali said? Ali said, that's fine. They saw all of justice and they still walked away. Let them go. I don't need them anymore.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
روحي كريم عظيم عليم حليم حكيم متين غفور شكور ودود قيوم رؤوف
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website at iranradio.ir. Log on to our website at iranradio.ir. Thank you.
in the limelight.
London's Heathrow Airport is now fully operational, but airlines say the recent closure of the airport will have a huge impact in the coming days. We take a look at the British media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. British newspaper The Guardian has covered the story and tells us more. Flights began landing at London's Heathrow Airport on Saturday morning, 22nd of March, as it aimed to return to normal operation after shutting down over a loss of power. Restrictions on overnight flights were temporarily lifted to help ease congestion, the Department of Transport confirmed, and the airport said passengers should come to Heathrow on Saturday as they normally would. British Airways, which has a major presence at Heathrow, said it expected to operate around 85% of its scheduled flights at the airport on Saturday. The airline would usually expect to run nearly 600 departures and arrivals on a Saturday, but it is understood cancellations will be made, where possible, to high-frequency routes. According to flight tracking website Flight Radar 24, British Airways flight BA56 from Johannesburg, South Africa, was the first regular passenger flight to land at Heathrow Airport since Thursday evening, touching down at 4:37 a.m. on Saturday, 22nd of March. Downing Street said there were questions to answer after a fire at an electrical substation closed down the airport, stopping more than 1,350 flights and disrupting the journeys of hundreds of thousands of passengers. Counter-terrorism police were leading the investigation into the unprecedented incident that left Britain's biggest airport, Heathrow, unable to function as engineers tried to restore power but said there was no indication of foul play. Two people familiar with the investigation said officials did not believe the fire was the result of any criminal activity or a hostile state act, and was more likely to be accidental. Police confirmed on Friday evening, 21st of March, that the fire was not thought to be suspicious. We continue with The Guardian's coverage of this news story. Heathrow Airport partially reopened on Friday evening, 21st of March, but airlines said the closure would continue to have a huge impact on passengers in the coming days. Ministers acknowledged the immense distress and disruption caused to passengers, vowing we will learn the lessons. Asked about an inquiry and whether National Grid had questions to answer, the Prime Minister's official spokesperson said there are questions to answer on how this has happened and what can be done to prevent the scale of disruption we've seen from happening again once the situation is under control. Passengers were warned to stay away from Heathrow Airport all day on Friday, 21st of March, after a London Fire Brigade was called to tackle the blaze that started shortly after 11 p.m., on Thursday night at a substation in Hayes, Middlesex, north of the airport. More than 70 firefighters worked in challenging and hazardous conditions to bring the fire under control, according to the London Fire Brigade. But it was still burning at 8 a.m. on Friday, with 25,000 litres of oil having caught fire at the substation. Officers said that despite the acrid smell, there was no air quality danger to the public. Power to 67,000 homes was cut off for several hours, and more than 100 people were evacuated. Power supplies have now been restored to all customers, including Heathrow Airport, allowing operations to resume at the airport. More than 1,350 flights carrying at least 200,000 passengers had been scheduled to arrive and depart from the airport on Friday, connecting to around 230 destinations, including those in the United States, for which the airport acts as the main gateway from Europe. About 120 long-haul flights to Heathrow were in the air when the closure was announced overnight, with arrivals diverting to other airports around Britain and Europe. London residents will be disturbed by more aircraft noise at night than normally permitted in the coming days after the Department of Transport lifted restrictions on night flights to ease the backlog. Heathrow has experienced significant disruption from external events, such as air traffic control outage in August of 2023 and the mass groundings during the COVID crisis. But the last time the airport was fully closed for an extended period of time was during heavy snowfall and freezing conditions in December of 2010, when 4,000 flights were cancelled. Senior security and aviation figures expressed consternation at the world's best connected airport could be closed for so long because of a power cut. The International Air Transport Association, IATA, said it was yet another case of Heathrow letting down both travellers and airlines. Sky News has also covered the same story. As one of the busiest travel hubs in the world, Heathrow Airport is considered a part of UK's critical national infrastructure. The power failure and the chaos that ensued on Friday, 21st of March, exposed that system's overall vulnerability. An electrical substation fire and an entire airport shutdown, with over 1,000 flights cancelled, others rerouted worldwide and 200,000 passengers affected by the disruption. The Heathrow Airport closure on Friday really highlights the critical part of critical national infrastructure, the systems and facilities that are essential for society to function. At best, it's an embarrassment. At worst, it points to serious vulnerabilities across the country that could be exploited by bad actors. Heathrow Airport needs a lot of power, the equivalent of a small town, and the bulk of this is supplied by a dedicated connection at the North Hyde substation, reflecting Heathrow's critical status. But that also appears to be the problem, because Heathrow requires so much power, having a second dedicated connection would likely be prohibitively expensive, especially for the low probability scenario of such a catastrophic fire. This is the first time that this has happened in decades. Fires like this are not common at all, according to Dr. Robin Priest, a reader in Future Power Systems at University of Manchester. Dr. Robert Priest added, "It is just broken down without catching fire. You might never have noticed anything, as we have sufficient alternative routes for the electricity to follow. But uncommon doesn't mean impossible. And when infrastructure is critical, it's supposed to be protected. MI5 is in charge of critical infrastructure protection in Britain. The organisation ultimately responsible is MI5 through the National Protective Security Authority. This lists 13 national infrastructure sectors, from chemicals to nuclear, emergency services to food, and space to water." You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is the part of the speech delivered by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with a number of distinguished reciters of the Holy Quran in a gathering titled Communion with the Holy Quran. This meeting took place in the Imam Khomeini Husseiniya on the first day of the blessed month of Ramadan, March 2nd, 2025. People are afflicted with envy, stinginess, suspicion, laziness, pursuing desires, selfishness, and the tendency to prioritize their own interests over those of the society as a whole. These matters exist among us too, although we are an Islamic society. We have made some progress in certain areas, but at the same time, we also suffer from these afflictions. The remedy lies in the Quran. If the Quran is recited correctly, and I will briefly mention something about that shortly, if the Quran is recited and it is listened to, these ailments will be alleviated. Not only does the Quran tells us the remedy, pay attention to this. It also shows us the way and creates motivation within us. This is important. There are many people who know the way, but they lack motivation. Intellectual and moral systems are unable to create motivation in them. The Quran generates that motivation. When the Quran is recited well, we listen well, and we contemplate it well, we can achieve remarkable results and cure our ailments. The Quran itself has highlighted this matter. It is He who sent to the illiterate people a messenger from among themselves to recite to them his communications. Surah 62, verse 2. Recitation. It says he recited the verses. What is the result that comes from reciting the verses? To purify them. Surah 62, verse 2. The recitation of these verses leads to purification. What does purification mean? It means a healing of the soul and heart. That is the meaning of purification. The human heart, spirit, and soul are healed of those ailments I mentioned earlier. This is what purification means. The Quran does this. The recitation of the Quran purifies. And to teach them the book, Surah 62, verse 2. He teaches the book to the people. What is the book? The book is the framework of individual and social life. It's what God Almighty has termed the truth in Quranic and religious expressions.
Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
The Supplication on Fridays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, the first before the bringing forth and the giving of life, and the last after the annihilation of all things. The All-Knowing who forgets not him who remembers him, and decreases not him who thanks him, and disappoints not him who supplicates him, and cuts not off the hope.